This is an audio summary for your AIL 8102 course. The reading is Prediction Machines, Chapter 6, Data is the New Oil by Ajay Agrawal, Joshua Gans, and Avi Goldfarb. Hal Varian, Google's chief economist, offered a mind-bending perspective back in 2013. He said, "A billion hours ago, modern Homo sapiens emerged. A billion minutes ago, Christianity began. A billion seconds ago, the IBM PC was released. A billion Google searches ago was this morning." Think about that for a moment. A billion Google searches every single morning. And each search generates a data point, information about what someone was looking for, where they were, what device they used, what time of day. A billion data points every single day, and they've been collecting this at scale for over two decades. Google isn't alone. Facebook collects data on billions of people, what they like, who their friends are, what they search for, where they are. Microsoft has similar scale with their cloud services. Amazon knows what you buy, when you buy it, what you look at but don't buy. Local governments track traffic patterns, energy usage, and citizen interactions. Startups collect everything they can find. The cost of collecting data has plummeted. Sensors are ubiquitous and cheap. Cloud storage costs nearly nothing, and data has tremendous value, lots of it. Some observers call data the new oil, invoking the parallel to the Industrial Revolution when oil became the fuel that powered economies. Data is the raw material that powers prediction machines. Better data, and more types of data lead to better predictions. In economic terms, data is a key complement to prediction technology. As prediction becomes cheaper and more powerful, data becomes more valuable. Think of it like this: a prediction machine without data is useless. A Ferrari engine without fuel goes nowhere. You have the hardware, but it won't do anything for you. Now, prediction machines use data in three distinct ways, and understanding these roles is critical for managing data investments. First, there's input data, the data you feed the machine at the moment you want to make a prediction. When a cardiologist's app uses your Apple Watch to measure your heart rate continuously and tries to predict whether you have an irregular heartbeat, that heart rate data is input data. It's the signal you're feeding the system right now to get an answer. Second, there's training data, the historical data the machine learns from before it ever sees your case. Cardiogram, the heart rhythm app, needed to study 6,000 people to understand what patterns distinguish normal rhythms from irregular ones. Of those 6,000, about 200 actually had irregular heart rhythms. The machine learned by comparing heart rate patterns of people with the condition to people without it, learning what the visual signature of an irregular rhythm looks like in the data. Third, there's feedback data, the data that helps improve the machine over time after it's already launched. As Cardiogram's users go forward, the app gets feedback about whether it was right or wrong. That feedback refines the algorithm continuously. Users who are diagnosed with arrhythmias retroactively provide data that the machine can learn from. Sometimes the same data serves all three roles. Sometimes it doesn't. But acquiring all this data is expensive. You have to weigh the cost of collecting data against the benefit you get from better predictions. Let's look at how machines actually learn from data by walking through the Cardiogram example in detail. Cardiogram wanted to predict strokes using irregular heart rhythms as a proxy because medical research shows that irregular rhythms cause about a quarter of all strokes. To make this prediction, the machine needed input data, your heart rate, combined with an outcome measure, whether you actually have an irregular rhythm. This comparison is how the machine learns what normal versus abnormal looks like. It needs data from people with the condition and people without it. It needs to see enough examples of each to spot reliable patterns. In Cardiogram's preliminary study, they looked at 200 people with irregular heartbeats out of 6,000 total. The machine compared the heart rate signatures of those 200 to the patterns in the 5,800 people without irregular rhythms. Over time, as the app gathers feedback from millions of users going forward, the predictions improve further. But here's where things get tricky. Acquiring training data is often really difficult, especially for predictions about the future. Think about predicting next year's hockey wins for the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know that teams scoring lots of goals tend to win. So you feed your prediction machine historical data on goals scored, goals allowed, and wins for the past several decades. It learns beautifully. You have decades of data showing the relationship. Then you try to predict next season's wins. You hit a wall. You don't have data on next season's goals yet. The machine was trained on this year's data, but you need next year's data to make the prediction for next year. You could try using last year's goals to predict this year's wins, but that's not the prediction you want. This is a recurring problem in prediction. Machines can only use information that's available at the time you make the prediction. For many real-world applications, predicting the future of a business, predicting how customers will respond to a price change, predicting the outcome of mergers and acquisitions, that's a serious constraint. So businesses face critical decisions about data strategy. How many different types of data do you need to include? How many individuals should be in your training set? How often should you collect new data? Each choice involves trade-offs. More data means better predictions, but higher costs. Fewer variables means lower computational cost, but potentially worse predictions. The art is figuring out which data investments actually pay off. Cardiogram provides a good example of smart data strategy. They wanted to predict strokes. They focused on one high-quality signal, heart rate from an Apple Watch. They didn't try to collect every possible data point that might help: sleep patterns, diet habits, family medical history, genetic markers, stress levels, physical activity. Why? Because once they'd defined their prediction target specifically, they could figure out the minimum data they needed to achieve good prediction accuracy. They also didn't need detailed information from everyone in their training set. Only the training data needed to include people with irregular rhythms to establish that pattern. Everyone else could be studied with minimal data collection, just the heart rate signal. This is smart data strategy. How much training data do you actually need? That depends on two factors. First, how reliable is your signal relative to noise? Is heart rate a strong predictor of irregular rhythms or a weak one? Second, how costly are mistakes? If an error could kill someone, you need more data and higher confidence. If an error costs you a customer, you can afford to be less precise. If heart rate is a strong predictor and mistakes aren't catastrophic, you might need just hundreds of people. If it's a weak signal or errors are dangerous, you might need thousands or millions. Data scientists have tools called power calculations that estimate exactly how many examples you need to make a useful prediction at a given confidence level. The key insight is this: more accurate predictions require more training data, and acquiring that data can be costly, sometimes prohibitively so. There's a fascinating distinction between statistical thinking and economic thinking about data that shapes strategy. From a purely statistical perspective, data has diminishing returns to scale. Your first 100 observations teach you a lot. The 101st observation teaches you less. By the millionth observation, you're learning almost nothing new. Think about the first time you drive to the airport. You learn a lot about travel time. The second time, you still learn something useful. The 100th time, you've basically figured out the patterns and you're learning almost nothing new. This is decreasing returns to scale. Each additional data point has less value. But economics tells a different story. Economic value doesn't always follow statistical patterns. Consider search engines. For common queries like Olivia Rodrigo, Google, Bing, and DuckDuckGo all return similar results. Nobody switches between them because of better results on common searches. The differences are too small to matter. But search for something unusual like general adversarial networks. Suddenly, the differences matter. Google's results are better, partly because Google has more data on unusual searches. Google serves billions of people searching for both common and rare things. That concentrated data about rare queries, exactly where statistical diminishing returns are strongest, is where Google's real competitive advantage lies. So, from an economic standpoint, having more and better data than your competitor can be worth exponentially more, even though statistically each additional data point teaches you less. Rare data about rare events can be extremely valuable in the marketplace. This creates an interesting dynamic. From a business perspective, data might have increasing returns to scale even though statistics say otherwise. If you have more data than your competitor, and that data lets you jump from useless to useful predictions, or from worse than the competitor to better than the competitor, then the value gained isn't marginal, it's transformative. A threshold exists. Cross it and you own the market. Stay below it and you're irrelevant. Customers only use the search engine that's best. There's no second place. This explains why tech giants obsess over data collection and why they offer free services in exchange for data. They understand that data isn't just statistically better. It's economically more valuable when you have more of it than everyone else. Here's the critical management takeaway. You must balance data costs against prediction value. How much will it cost to acquire data? How much will better predictions be worth to your business? Answering these questions requires estimating return on investment for each type of data. Don't just collect everything because you can, that's wasteful. Be strategic. Identify the specific prediction problem you're trying to solve, determine the minimum data you need to solve it, and invest intelligently. Sometimes that means prioritizing data quality over quantity. Sometimes it means going deep on a few signals rather than shallow on many. The goal is to maximize the gap between what your prediction costs and what it's worth. Data is indeed like oil. It's the fuel that powers prediction engines. But unlike oil, which gets burned and consumed, data can be refined, reused, and improved. And like oil, data is most valuable when you have more of it than your competitor, when you can access rare reserves that nobody else has, and when you can convert it into competitive advantage. In this case, the energy of accurate predictions that drive better decisions and create long-term business value.